From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we're your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Boy, am I excited about this hour of the program because, you know, I've been talking for quite a while now about Mr. Vance Pollock. And, you know, he is not only a great friend and co-conspirator. We've worked on many projects over the years, but he truly is, in my opinion, the best at what he does in the world. I have called him the Sherlock Holmes of historians, and yes, he is a sleuth, but he's also an uncanny profiler of people. He is an occasional urban ninja when the case calls for it, and he truly has that magical ability to sort of serendipitously stroll into a series, a scene of facts and evidence that are fitting for whatever he sets his mind to investigate. And that's just some kind of an eerie, God-given gift, but he's got it. And that's why he is the chief historian for the Asheville Mystery Museum. And his name, once again, is Mr. Vance Pollock. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, Vance.
Pleasure to be here, Josh, in the flesh.
I know, it's so strange to say I have a guest in the studio tonight, but I'm not there. So at least you and Sam, two extremely tall men, take up space and compare things.
A combined 13 and a half feet tall.
Absolutely.
So, okay, right off the bat, you know, this has actually worked out very well because I've been talking to you for a while, Vance, about having you back on the show. And then this case popped up that we covered last week on the program. A man named Greg Becker and his wife, Sue, from Iowa, took a ghost tour in Asheville in June. And at one point, they were walking down Church Street, and Greg took a series of photographs, and one of them showed what clearly appeared to be a female human figure standing near the church and sort of pointing to some location on the ground. And so we talked to Greg, and we got his story down pat. And then we took the original files from his camera and all the information, and I sent it to what I call my crack team of imaging analysts, which is you, Vance, as well as Mr. Mobius and filmmaker C. Eric Scott. And Mobius, as we talked about earlier in the program, was able to extract an enormous amount of technical data. Greg did the right thing, taking control photographs, and we were able to determine, according to Mobius, these were authentic photographs taken at this location at this time. There were 7 seconds between this shot and that shot. And then C. Eric Scott was able to run the image through various filters and enhancements, and he concluded that it was a real tangible figure in the scene. And you, Vance, right off the bat said, you know, this ghost bears a strange resemblance to Cat Wilson. And Cat Wilson is a friend of ours, and she has been a ghost tour guide in Asheville for many years. And when you said that, Vance, for whatever reason, it hadn't occurred to me until you said it. But when you said it, I thought, there is a resemblance. And so I sent the photograph and information to Kat, and Kat emailed me back, and she said, yes, I recognize myself. That was me. It turns out that Kat doesn't usually guide that particular tour, but that night she was guiding it, and she said that she at one point had just quickly stepped into the scene and pointed out an area where a lot of people get good paranormal photos, and she said, you know, those are the Doc Martens that I'm wearing, et cetera, et cetera, and she took full credit for being the woman in the photo. And so given that information, I contacted Greg and said, well, what do you think about this? And Greg wrote me back, and he said, Josh, we looked at our photo compared to Kat's photo. We can see the resemblance, and we can't dispute this conclusion. Neither Sue or I remember Kat in this location, but it makes sense. The bag she was carrying would explain the strap across the shoulder. We thank you, Vance, and everyone that investigated the photo for us. We're sorry it didn't turn out as we thought, but glad to have reached a reasonable conclusion. And what I would like, because I know that Greg and Sue are listening, and I want you guys to know that, hey, this has been a wonderful exercise for us, because it gave us an opportunity to all get together, use our best ability, and come up with what was obviously the correct solution. And not only was it a good exercise for us, but it's a very good lesson for everybody out there who's taking ghost photos. When you're in a dark location like they were, it's very easy for a person to just briefly step in front of the camera and you not even see it or realize it. Your camera flash goes off and boom, you know, you get an image there that you may not see at the time. And you never realized that a person was there. So this has actually been a very positive thing, and it says a lot about, I think, really our integrity and sincerity when it comes to analyzing ghost photos. So this has been a positive experience, but especially because, Vance, before we knew that Kat was going to step in and say, yes, it was me, you were still looking into the history of that site, which is a fascinating place, well known for a lot of ghostly activity, and you were discovering some interesting things that you otherwise might not have looked into. We won't get into the Pelly thing because it's a little too complicated, but you also have found some information about the bodies that really were buried there on Church Street at one point, right, Vance?
Sure. Most of those were removed around the turn of the century to Riverside Cemetery, which is the Asheville City Cemetery, you know, burial place of Thomas Wolfe, O. Henry, Zebulon Vance, the Civil War governor of North Carolina, etc. A lot of prominent persons buried out there at Riverside Cemetery. And so along about 1900, as they were widening the streets and doing more construction on the churches and other buildings along that street, they moved most of the graves, at least the marked graves. But as you know, in those days, the old days, they didn't necessarily mark every grave. And if they did, maybe it was just a wooden cross that within 15 years' time, there was no trace. And so, and especially in those days, the infant mortality rate, that's one thing I started noticing, or was reminded of when I started looking back at a lot of the accounts of deaths in Asheville around that time. I would say that probably 3 out of 4 deaths were infants or children under 5 years old, because the infant mortality rate was so high. I mean, I think that's a reason a lot of people in these rural areas had 12 or 15 kids, was just on the off chance that 4 or 5 of them might actually survive to adulthood. And so, yeah, a lot of babies buried like that. You can't afford to have a stone carved for each one of those. So I thought, you know, possibly what looks like the ghost of a woman here at the south wing of the Methodist Church on Church Street, Nashville, could be a grieving mother, because you know, in all likelihood, that there are the remains of small children, babies and infants and toddlers, you know, beneath that church, because that was an expansion. The whole south wing of the Methodist Church wasn't built until 1905, after what graves they could had been removed.
So now, Vance, we've got a couple minutes before our first break, but let me ask you this, and between you and me, this may seem kind of like a silly question, kind of like the pot calling the kettle black, but why do you think it is that you have always been a person with such a driving curiosity to look into these types of mysteries?
Well, I think I might call it a retreat from the known. I'm very much bored by what other people are interested in merely because other people are interested in it. I would rather listen to, you know, music that drives other people nuts, my wife included. I was just using the example Captain Beefheart today. I don't listen to Captain Beefheart because I can hang out with a large group of Captain Beefheart fans. I listen to Beefheart because it drives other people away, I think. And similarly with obscure elements in history and literature, whatever subject matter. I think to use it as a retreat, as sanctuary from the regular world. I'm just kind of a reclusive character by nature, and I think there's no better place to hide out than the dark recesses of history.
Well, that's very well said. Well, let me ask you this real quick before we take a break. Do you feel that there is such a thing as life after death?
I do. And the incident, I think everyone needs only one incident to make a believer out of them, and it was when I was a young man. I don't know if I told it on the show before, but it bears repeating because it's very genuine, and I get, you know, I've told it to people and get a rather emotional about it sometimes because it's genuine and it's true. I was in the home where I grew up, my mother and father's house, at some time before I was born and came along. My grandmother used a bedroom that was adjoining the living room. And so when I was a young teenager, we'll say in the early to mid-80s, my grandmother had been dead and gone for a good 8 or 10 years, and I was alone in the house. I know I was absolutely alone and locked in the house, and the knob on this interior door started to turn. It didn't start to rattle like if a plane breaks a sound barrier nearby, it'll cause a little rattle. The windows will rattle or a door may rattle. But the door knob on this interior door started to deliberately turn slowly back and forth. And that's the only incident I need to convince me. Something's out there that we can't understand yet.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell all of you about a new book that I have coming out later this month, called It Was a Dark and Creepy Night, and Vance has a story in that book that made the cut. We'll talk a little bit about that. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
On a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell? Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. I went up to Memphis, and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor, and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. First time I shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer, but with the second shot she died. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. But jailer, oh jailer, jailer, I can't sleep, 'cause all around my bedside I hear the patter of Delia's feet. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Yes, the show where the unusual becomes usual. Thanks for spending your evening with us. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange, presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you may call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. Again, that is 828-298-5402. You'll find a link at speakingofstrange.com. And I also want to let everybody know that, of course, as of late, I've been doing some wishing machine webinars once in a while. And these have been a big hit. I am already getting emails from people all the time talking about them and asking when the next one will be. So I have planned another wishing machine webinar for Monday, August the 18th. And I'm going to start this one at 9 p.m. East Coast time. That's because a lot of people on the West Coast of the U.S. have said, it's too hard for us to tune in if you don't start them a little bit later. And people want to be a part of it live so they can ask questions. So if you don't know what the wishing machine is, well, it is what it sounds like it is. It sounds unbelievable, but it's a mind-powered device that can make wishes come true. And if you go to wishingmachineproject.com, you can learn about it. You can watch the free video and click the news section for a link to the webinar coming up later this month. I am talking right now with Mr. Vance Pollack, and you know, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening this month. I mentioned that I have a book coming out officially later this month, and the book is called It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. It was originally titled Creepy Little Tales, but the publisher changed the name to It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. And the subtitle is Real Life Encounters with the Strange, Mysterious, and Downright Terrifying. And basically what I did was ask people around the world to send me stories that met three guidelines. One, they had to be short, say a page or less. Two, they had to be true. And three, they had to sort of make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. And what a fantastic selection of stories came in from all around the world. And so the book has already been printed. It's published by New Page Books. And I have already received a few pre-release copies, and it looks great. I mean, it's 250 pages. It's very nicely bound. And one of the – and, of course, hundreds and hundreds of stories came in, but I selected 150 of the best ones to go into the book. And one of the stories comes from Thomas Vance Pollack. And so, Vance, you will soon be receiving your free copy of this book, but would you mind if I read your story?
No, I was going to ask you if you would, because it's been a few months since I submitted that. And, yeah, I'd like to hear it in another's voice to see if it actually works. You know, it's a story that was very close to my heart. I grew up with it. So I'd love for you to read it.
All right. Well, I'm holding the actual copy of the book. It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. And on page 246, we have The Legend of Red Blood Rock, by Thomas Vance Pollack, Mitchell County, North Carolina. As I was growing up, I remember often hearing my mother recount a local legend from her small mountain community. The tale spoke of a murdered man, fallen and bleeding, left to die on a great pale boulder along the side of a creek. And although the body is long gone, every time it rains, the boulder will still run red with blood. As a boy, this story always fascinated me, and I never tired of hearing it. Many years later, I came across a publication while doing research on my great-great-grandfather, Kit Bird. According to the book, he was murdered back in 1881 during a run-in with his business partners, that is, fellow moonshiners, the Whitson brothers. The murder happened near Red Hill, a rural mountain community in Mitchell County, North Carolina. It is supposed that all three brothers fired shots at Kit as he attempted to walk away from a heated argument. Kit staggered to a nearby creek bank, where he fell upon a large, pale boulder and bled to death. Red Hill is just miles down the road from the community in which my mom grew up. So without knowing it, she had for decades been recounting a legend born from the murder of her own great-grandfather. Good job, Vince.
Yeah, yeah. I think it reads pretty well there, Josh.
And it goes to show that this uncanny ability that you have to sort of tap into legends and history in a personal way seems to even go back generations before you. You know, when you and I have been working on projects together, for example, projects like those related to John Lyerly, who was the sheriff of Buncombe County at one point, who committed suicide in our old museum location. There are times when you're just walking through a cemetery without any clear direction, and you just stumble upon the grave of the person who is relevant to what you're investigating. How do you explain that, Vance?
I don't know. I don't want to talk like maybe a lot of professional mediums, you know, people who hang out a shingle with a red palm on it or whatever and say, I can do this. Here's what I can do for you. I'm not a salesman in that way. But for my own satisfaction and out, I mean, I tend to, you're right, I do prowl cemeteries a lot, but I tend to do this with a very open mind and a sense of respect. I think that's necessary, because if there is such thing as an intelligent spirit, I think it can read you. It can tell if you're genuine or sincere, if you're going to give it a fair shake or not. And like you mentioned, Sheriff John Lyerly, by modern standards, he's probably not a very likable sort of character. He's very mean-tempered and racist, among other things, you know, a violent man. So I have to try and put myself in the context of the time that these people lived. And if their spirits are out there, and if there are messages that they want to deliver to me, or if there's a message that they want me to deliver to someone else, then I have to be receptive to it in a respectful way, if that makes any sense.
Well, that's a very good point, because some of these people that you have investigated and researched over the years are people who would be considered diabolical by modern mainstream standards, people who are Nazi sympathizers and that kind of thing. And yet we have to look at the reality that in the minds of those individuals, they did not see themselves as being evil people. It's like, you know, let's go to the extreme here. You take somebody like Adolf Hitler. We can all look at Hitler and say, well, the most evil man who ever lived. But Hitler, I'm sure, did not think of himself that way. So when you are channeling, and again, we're using that term very loosely, but when you're channeling the energy of those people's lives and consciousness, you do have to do this from a sort of detached perspective if you want to see them from a non-judgmental point of view, the way they saw themselves. Is that a good way of putting it?
I think that's very well put. And another thing, I suppose the closest thing that a lot of layman, you know, people may have to it is the idea of like playing with a Ouija board. A lot of people go and play with a Ouija board, and it's got a bad rap or whatever like that. But I think if you go at it where, and you're very specific about the information you need, and you ask, you know, out of a genuine desire for information, then you're likely to get better results.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Vance about a couple things. One, how does he feel about the idea that information can be stored in the environment about everything that's happened in a place that you can somehow access? And secondly, we'll ask him if there's one story that kind of stands out in his mind as a really good example of something that just shocked and surprised him. And that's going to be a hard question because that happens all the time to this man. I'm talking with Vance Pollock, my friends. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop, and you may call Wright's Coin Shop and just find out how to turn your money into more money. It's very easy. Just call 828-298-5402. Write that down, 828-298-5402. I also want to let everybody know right now there is a special sale, if you want to call it that, going on where you can instantly download PDFs of three of my more popular works. If you go to Warren Books Now, you can download the Wishing Machine Workbook, Poor Man's Paranormal, and Brown Mountain Lights, a viewing guide. And if you do it right now, we'll even throw in a freebie for you. Practical wand making, and it's got a little secret technique in there that you can use to figure out if a wand works for you, all for $9.95, so you can enjoy that instantly. Go to Warren Books Now. I'm talking with Vance Pollock, chief historian at the Asheville Mystery Museum. You know, Vance, sometimes these days when I talk about ghostly activity, I describe it this way. When you go to Walmart and you buy a product, that product has a little sticker on it, which is called an RFID chip. And this is a passive circuit. It does absolutely nothing until you walk out the door of Walmart and it passes through an energy field. And that energy field activates that little chip and wakes it up, and then it starts transmitting information back. And that's when you hear the buzz, 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 buzz if you're not supposed to be taking this chip out. And I kind of feel like that maybe a lot of the environment around us it operates in a similar fashion to a passive RFID chip. In other words, there is all this passive information in the environment that reflects layers and layers and layers of history, maybe even every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every year. And when particular people go into that area and sort of shine their consciousness on it, if the frequencies match up, it awakens this information, and it is able to sort of holographically project back. And that's why some people at particular places under particular conditions are able to experience these things that other people are not. That's a very broad, general way of looking at this phenomenon. But now when you go to do your research, it's not like there's a voice talking to you. It's not like a ghost is saying, do this, do that. It's almost like there is information that is coming into your brain and you're paying attention to it. How would you take the model that I've described and apply it to your investigation technique?
Well, I think maybe the thing that people would relate it to in some ways is deja vu. It's like when you find yourself in a place, in a setting, and the atmosphere is very much familiar to you. And you almost know what's going to happen next. And it's almost like when you realize you're dreaming, it's like a lucid dream where you say, oh, okay, I'm dreaming, so of course I'm going to get lucky with this chick. Or, oh, yeah, I'm dreaming, so how about I fly over the ocean over here and do some stunts on the Eiffel Tower or whatever. Like, you know, you can, once you control that situation, you almost feel like you know what's going to happen next, and you can almost suggest what happens. In a way, like there's an outside element to it, and I think the story, you said you would get around to asking me for a good story, and I think it illustrates, the one that I thought about during the break really illustrates what I'm trying to get at here, even though this sounds very nebulous. You kind of feel like, okay, somebody has answered the phone on the other end, so now I'm going to continue along these lines of communication. So you suggestively, this is all very, very hard to express in words, but you suggestively kind of absorb this energy from the environment at that point. And it's then when some pretty amazing things start to happen.
Okay, well, give us an example of one of these times that surprised you.
Well, it was a dark and stormy night. And, of course, you talk about the energy, the electricity, and I think in my case, some of the most amazing things have happened right after an electrical storm, not only because the air and the atmosphere, the ether, is charged, but very often the electricity is out, and that was the situation here. I think that the modern electric grid, electric lights, telephone wires, all this buzz, all this hum, interrupts a connection to natural energies. And I think that's one reason that people who feel like they're more in touch with nature like to retreat to the boonies, as far away from the city lights as they possibly can. But this is the way it happened on this dark and stormy night after a thunderstorm that had knocked the power out all over Asheville. And I was still delivering pizzas on the side of Bowcatcher Mountain. And I had just recently been investigating some places on Bowcatcher. And you and I had been talking about some of these places, Ardmion, which was later known as the Sky Club. It was a fine restaurant and concert hall in 30s, 40s, 50s, right up until the 70s. I think it had kind of become a little bit shabby and run down. The management was not of the standard that it had been in its glory days. But if you talk to older people around Asheville, they all talk about the Sky Club, and you can actually see it up on the mountain shining white on the side of Beaucatcher Mountain from downtown Asheville. Well, this night, you had recently told me, if you ever get a chance to get us into the Sky Club, let's do that. Well, I had no connections at the Sky Club, and I didn't know really where to start, but I had really been probing my mind and trying to come up with something. And I had also gotten some information on a death in the house on the Ardmeon property up there at Ardmeon Park by the Sky Club. The owner of the Sky Club, Gus Adler, had burned to death smoking in bed. And somehow these elements were starting to put themselves together. I found that a band called the Casa Loma Orchestra used to play at the Sky Club when they would pass through the area, and one of their hits was a song called Smoke Rings. So I was listening to this Casa Loma Orchestra song, Smoke Rings, and imagining a poor, he had a drinking problem at the time, poor Gus Adler, after a hard night's work in the restaurant there, retiring to his room and listening to, you know, this old romantic music and having a cigarette and passing out and never waking up again, burning to death in his bed. This is all pretty morbid stuff, pretty dark stuff, but I could almost immerse myself in that environment as I closed my eyes. I could almost imagine what it felt like to be Gus Adler lighting that last cigarette and dozing off in the bed. Now, after making that discovery, I did a little research online, or I don't even know that I was even particularly researching so much as just reading the forums on the Mountain Express. It's a local weekly, and they have a discussion forum. And someone posted, "Ghosts on Beaucatcher" was the headline. This is just like the same day that you and I had been talking about Gus Adler's death. "Ghosts on Beaucatcher." And I read this, and a guy describes walking along College Street back to his apartment on Beaucatcher, which is right across from the Sky Club, and stopping outside on his stairwell to smoke a cigarette and hearing a man screaming. A man screaming and screaming. And it was an unearthly shriek of like a man in severe pain as he smoked the cigarette. And he said he snuffed his cigarette out and ran inside and closed himself up. And how strange, I thought, that this guy is telling this story, and he's emphasizing the fact that he was smoking a cigarette when he felt this cold chill and then he heard this scream. I said, Josh, I don't know how to pursue this, but I think I'm going to end up taking this guy a pizza. So on this night that the power was out, I pull up in front of an apartment, and I say, this has got to be the guy. And I run down, and I knock on the door and say, here's your pizza. Seen any ghosts lately? And his face turned pale white. And we'll conclude.
That's a great cliffhanger. Awesome. You see, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about, my friends. When Vance Pollock gets on the case, it's almost like reality begins to morph and transform itself a little bit in order to direct him where he needs to go to resurrect the past. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You'll hear the rest of this story and more when we come back here on Speaking of Strange. And we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. And I am Joshua P. Warren. Next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So you can choose to stick around if that's your cup of tea, or you can choose to turn off the radio. Whatever works for you. But that's what we're going to present in hour number three of tonight's show. Right now I'm talking with Vance Pollock, and by the way, that bumper music that brought us back in was the song So Inclined by a friend of mine and Vance's, whom Vance introduced me to years ago, John Reed, also known as Jarry. And hey, Vance, is he still performing?
John Reed is not doing music. He's doing comedy in New York City these days.
Really?
Yeah, he was taking classes with Upright Citizens Brigade and doing some of their open mics and stuff like that. And yeah, he's in the Big Apple, been up there for about a year now. But he's out of the music business for a little bit, but he left behind some really great records.
What a shame. Well, he'll come back to it.
Yeah.
He's a natural musician, and that's all there is to it. Well, this is a short segment, so let's get back to your story, Vance. What happened next?
Well, I left listeners on the side of the mountain with the power out after an electrical storm, and I'm delivering a pizza to this guy who says, all my power was out, so I had to order out for something or I was going to go hungry. But my question to him after I shoved the pizza into his hand was, seen any ghosts lately? And I thought that I was seeing a ghost when he became completely white and kind of stammered. And then I said, yeah, I read your post on the Mountain Express forum. I figured it had to be you because there's no other building even close to the Sky Club. And just the way he had described, the way he had told his story about walking along College Street and down to the apartment and down the back stairs, he had pretty much described only one place, and that I would end up taking a pizza to that one place, you know, within days of having read his story. He kind of chuckled, an uneasy chuckle, and I thought, well, that was it. That was the feeling that I've been having. That's all it amounted to. But as I ran back up to my car, now imagine, this is a very remote road. It's right under Helen's Bridge on Beaucatcher Mountain, Josh. You know, there's no traffic on that road at night.
Mm-mm, no.
And here's a woman in a colorful dress standing in the middle of the road. She did not come from those apartments. The apartments are at my back as I run up the steps to my car. And my car is parked along the road in front of the apartments, and she's standing in the road further back, maybe 50 yards back. And I see this woman, and I didn't even think, but I approached her smiling and said, hello there. I mean, I almost felt at that time that this woman could be a ghostly apparition because she is so out of place there in the middle of this road in the dark and the power out on the side of the mountain. And I approach her and say, hi there. And she walks down to me and smiles, and it's almost as if we've known each other our whole lives. And I just say, hop in, I'll give you a ride. Where are you headed? And without any more introduction than that, she's in the car, and I'm giving her a ride down the mountain to a conference at a hotel that she was late for. She said, the power being out locked my car in the garage. I couldn't open my car with the electric garage door opener, and the rope on the inside was tangled up so that I couldn't physically open my garage door, so my car's trapped in my garage. And I called the taxi service, and the taxi cab got lost, and I called back cussing out the dispatcher, and she said, I'm so frustrated that I just basically came running down the mountain, instead of pulling my hair out, I just went running down the side of the mountain, and here you were to give me a ride. And I said, you live in the Sky Club, right? She said, sure. And I said, well, my friend Josh Warren and I were just looking for somebody to get us into the Sky Club. And she said, Joshua P. Warren, she says, I've read all of his books. I've been to see him speak several times, and I've been trying to get in touch with him. So here it is. Days after you and I just had the conversation, and you said, get us into the Sky Club. Here's this woman, she just turns up, standing in the middle of the street, in the dark, in the rain, with the power out.
Absolutely amazing.
It's beyond synchronicity. It's beyond what most people would consider synchronicity. It's riding a wave of something.
Well, and let me tell all of you listening to the show, that is not uncommon when Vance Pollock and I start working together. He does this on his own all the time anyway, but when we combine forces, just surreal new rifts open in the dimensions, and who knows what this fall is going to hold for us. Well, Vance is going to stick around for the rest of the show for the Dark 30 Hour. And by the way, Vance also hosts a radio program, so we're going to get the information on that when we come back as well. My friends, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.